I'm Judy, and I've been coming here to Riverview, my husband and I, for about 8 or 9 years now. I was involved in another church and had some leadership positions in that church as well. But when I came here to Riverview, I do want to mention I have 2 grown children too, by the way, but they're married, and so, yeah, they're going on doing their thing. But when I first started here at Riverview, I started out on the clean team. I don't know if any of you remember the clean team, but that was a team that after church you'd go in and clean the toilets and wash the windows. And then I eventually, they don't have that team anymore, so don't rush out to sign up for it because they have somebody else do it. But after that, then I moved into Stephen Ministry, and I've been on the leadership team since that started, and it's just an awesome, awesome way to get to serve God is to, you know, be able to have people that will want to reach out and just work with other people that are hurting within the church. As far as my professional background, I've had kind of an eclectic career, I guess, if you want to call it that way. I used to work for Community Mental Health, and then I went on to work for Peckham Incorporated, which is a private nonprofit that works with people with different kinds of disabilities. And from there, I went on to Michigan State University, worked in the College of Osteopathic Medicine, Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, where I was a practice manager, and I helped manage all the medical practices within that department. Went on to develop and build Origami, which is a brain injury rehabilitation center down the road. Was the director of that for a few years. And then God called me out to work for my first for-profit company, which was one I opened myself. So I've been doing medical billing and medical practice consulting for the last 10 years, and that's where I am today. But I wanted to talk to you about this idea of leveraging your leadership in the real world in your jobs. And the leveraging means to be able to influence other people and have some sort of power or ability to act as a way of influence with them. So when we think about leveraging our influence with others to learn more about Christ, there's no better place to do it than in the workplace, right? Because that's where you spend, a lot of us that are working full-time, that's where we spend the majority of our time, is in the workplace. And Jesus knew the importance of this better than anybody else because of Jesus's 132 public appearances in the New Testament. 122 of those took place in the workplace. And of the 52 parables that Jesus said or told, 45 had a workplace context. So Jesus himself spent the majority of his life working in a secular trade. He was a carpenter before he ever went into public ministry. So what does that say about the importance of work, right, and your ability to influence other people? The thing that always strikes me about Jesus as far as his ability to influence other people is there really was never a hard and fast formula that he used. He just went and helped people right where they were, whether it was struggling in an area of sin, maybe they needed a demon cast out, or, you know, physical healing. But he really didn't always have to preach the gospel message of salvation in order to have a positive influence on other people and cause them to want to follow him. It was more the way he talked to people, how he cared for people, even those people that weren't lovable. So now I want you to translate that to today and where you're working right now in your jobs. And just think about the people that you come in contact with each and every day in your workplace. You know, some people are there that kind of rub us the wrong way. You know, you think a good day is to get through without, you know, blowing up at them or talking about them behind your back because, you know, you just kind of sometimes come in contact with people that just rub, it's like, you know, sandpaper to you. They just rub you the wrong way. And I believe that God puts those people in your life not to make your life miserable, but more to be able to shape and mold you into learning how to love others right where they are, even when they're not lovable. So the Princeton Religion Research Center that published this landmark survey that was conducted for the Wall Street Journal. What they did was they went into the workplace and they looked at lots of different variables, like how do people work or act morally where they work. And they looked at things like cheating on their taxes or taking supplies that were for personal use that belonged to the company or calling in sick when they really weren't sick. And you can imagine, you know, the percentage was pretty high. They found a high incident of that kind of workplace behavior. But what is even more disturbing is there was no difference between the churched and the unchurched in that study. That means that, you know, a large percentage of the people sitting in this room probably have engaged in some of these behaviors in their jobs at one point or another. And, you know, it's easy to justify it. You can say, well, you know, everybody else does it. It's part of the culture of my work. It's often overlooked. I'm not going to get reprimanded for that. But it really is, it does tell people something about you. And when they know that, if they know that you're a Christian and they see some of these things going on, what kind of message is that? How is that furthering people for salvation? So, you know, just think about it. Have you ever taken a lunch hour longer than maybe what you were allowed? Maybe you've used the internet for personal use, or maybe you've used a copier postage machine when nobody was looking. I mean, I'm not up here to say I've never done that. I have. What I want to do is not to say this to point fingers, but just to continue to challenge all of us to look at that and how that is affecting other people. So whether you know it or not, you are influencing, impacting others for Christ. All your actions, your activities, and your conversations speak more volumes about what you stand for than what you would ever say in a gospel message. So I'm going to go over three core attributes that I think demonstrates God's ideal for a biblically based worker. And I want you to just look at them, kind of measure yourself up to how you're doing in these three areas. Okay, the first one is provide excellent work above the level of mediocrity in everything you do. Level of mediocrity is you're getting the job done, you know, you're meeting the basic standards of your job, whether it's in a ministry or in your workplace. But to pursue something with excellence should be both a goal and it is a mark of spiritual maturity. Ecclesiastes 9:10 says, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, for in the grave where you're going, there's neither working nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom." So this passage is really encouraging us to go above and beyond and do better than what's expected. And you might not get directly rewarded in the way of a bigger paycheck or more prestige, but prestige or a promotion, but it will lead others to begin to notice that. And I mentioned before that I own and operate my own business, and I really depend on IT support to keep things running, because everything we do is with computers and it's all done electronically and remotely. And so I had this guy I've used for a long time. I've never met him. His name is Shane. He lives in Florida. I'm here in Michigan. We've had a lot of conversations on the phone together, and I really depend on IT support because that's not my thing. So if something goes down, the server goes down, the remote terminal goes down, or the software screws up, I'm on the phone to Shane saying, "Oh my gosh, we're in a crisis. We have to get this fixed now, immediately." And I'm sure he has lots of other people calling him, telling him the same thing. But I have to tell you, every time I talk to that guy, he always says, "No problem. We'll get this done." He kind of calms me down. He has this kind of just way of helping me to feel less anxious. And he'll work all night long or over a weekend just to make sure that I'm back up and operational the next day. And to me, that is going above and beyond the level of mediocrity. He takes pride and gets something out of that for doing that. So I asked him one day after working with him for a few years, and I could see this pattern in his life over and over again. I said, "Shane, I just got to ask you, are you a Christian by chance?" And he said, "Well, yes, I am. I'm glad you noticed." And that's all he said. He didn't have to tell me where he went to church or anything. It was just more the way he lived his life. And so I could have gone to another vendor that was much cheaper, but I chose to stay with him because, you know, I was just so impressed by his level of excellence in his job. All right, the second thing, live a life of integrity within the workplace. Integrity is defined by what you do when no one else is looking. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen this violated throughout all of my work career. And I think that we're faced many times with many tests in our jobs, our positions, that sometimes we pass them and sometimes we fail. And many times we fail a lot. And I'm here to tell you that I've had lots of failures, and I'm not going to tell you about them today. I'm going to tell you about a success, okay? Because I believe in doing what works, and if I can, you know, anything that I can pass along might help. But this whole idea of having integrity when no one else is looking became relevant to me a few years back. I had a large practice that I was working with, had been for a few years, and it sounds weird, but we were still sending out all their insurance claims on paper. He just kind of had this suspicious thing about doing things electronically, and I kept trying to convince him to do it. He wouldn't do it because it was going to cost him more money, and I said, look, let's try it for a few months. We'll evaluate. I guarantee you, you'll get more money and quicker. Your claims will be processed quicker. He had finally agreed to do it, agreed to pay me more money to do it. Well, long story short, 6 months down the road, I discovered that the staff had not put everything in place to be able to bill him electronically, unbeknownst to me. I'd been collecting money from him for 6 months, thinking that we were doing it according to the terms that we had talked about. And I was suddenly faced with a dilemma. As a small business owner, every little dime counts. Every little dollar helps. And so I really wrestled. I'd like to say that I did the right thing immediately and just, you know, paid him back. But I really wrestled with this. Do I tell him? Do I not tell him? You know, how am I going to pay my expenses if I have to pay all this money back? Because I'd already spent it for other things like payroll and stuff. Well, I remember the story of Zacchaeus. You remember the short little guy in the tree, tax collector, ripped a lot of people off. He ended up noticing the influence Jesus was having on others, was drawn to him, gave his life to him. When he discovered his sin of ripping people off, he finally, you know, his eyes were open, he paid everybody back, and he actually paid them back four times the amount of what he took from them. And so that just kind of encouraged me to really look and just bite the bullet. So I called him up and I said, Bob, I have to tell you something. I've been charging you more money for 6 months. I haven't done what I promised to deliver, and so you now have a great big credit on your account. And his first comment to me was, well, I would have never known that if you hadn't told me. And I'm thinking, darn, no. Not really. Well, I was, kind of. But the point is to have integrity. It's to do the right thing. It's so hard. And you know what? I didn't have to close the doors by doing that. I was able to meet all my expenses. So, you know, just, and I know that God was pleased, okay? I know he was pleased. So the third area is to trust God in everything you do in your work. Now, this concept is really hard for some people. I am the kind of person that likes to kind of control my own destiny. I want to plan my future. I want to take control. I don't want to depend on anybody but myself in terms of where I'm going in my work. But once I gave my life to Christ back in when I was in my late 20s, I realized that I was going to have to start thinking much differently if I was going to be a person that's going working according to God's biblical principles. So The great part about getting older is that I can now look back on my life, and I can see how God has used each and every job I ever had to kind of be a building block to the next place He would have me go. And so it kind of became this accumulative effect that each job, whether it seemed significant or not, was preparing me for the next thing He would have me do. I'll give you an example. My very first, well, not my first job, but the one first job that I was actually on a payroll was when I was in high school. It was at John's Country Burger. You ever been there? It's up on South Cedar Street.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome place. You call on the phone back to the, you know, restaurant and call in your order, and then the waitress brings us out. Well, I noticed this really good-looking guy there. You know, he was a cook, and I was a waitress, and ended up dating him, going out with him, and I've been married to him now for 28 years. So you never know how God is going to use something in your workplace to impact your life. Now, obviously, that was a huge thing, and I'm not saying everybody's going to meet, you know, their future spouse at work, but the point is that God is directing your steps, okay? He's the one that is leading you to the next place for His plan and purpose. It's your job to pay attention to what He's doing in the midst of all that. Another example was when I was working at Peckham. I had been given some responsibilities, extra responsibilities. I felt like I was ready for the next step, and so I applied for a job as a director of a women's health center. And I confided with a coworker that I was going to apply for this job, and so I went on the interviews and got all the way up to the last interview with the executive director, and I just felt really good. I just knew this is where God was going to have me go. The interviews went great. We meshed well. I had met with the staff. It was awesome. Got a call from the executive director, and he said, "Judy, I really hate to tell you this, but we chose somebody else. She just had a little bit. You were right there. It was a hard decision, but we chose her because she had a little bit more direct experience." And I was crushed because the person that they chose was a coworker that I had confided in. As soon as she heard about it, she went out and applied for the position and got it. And I thought, all right, I wasn't a Christian at that point yet. I mean, I believed in God, but I hadn't fully dedicated my life to Him. So I'm thinking, God, what are you doing? That job was mine, and what caused me to want to tell her about it? Anyway, I didn't tell her that. I just congratulated her, went on. But later, I accepted Christ soon after that and realized that Women's Health Center had changed its policies, and they were going to start doing things with young girls that I knew would be totally against what God would have me do. So based on my new beliefs, I would have had to leave that position. I wouldn't have been able to stay. So whether I knew it or not, God was protecting me. Says in Jeremiah 29:11, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." So then I began to feel God calling me into something else. I was a director of origami, 24 hour a day, 7 days a week. I loved it. It was my baby. I had nurtured it and was starting to see things really take off and get stable. But God would not leave me alone. It was like He was pursuing me, saying, "You need to do something else." And so finally, my husband and I, we prayed about it, and I decided to leave. I left a lucrative job. I made a great salary, had retirement, which I don't anymore, but I had a car, I had a laptop, I had a phone, I had all the perks. But I just felt like I needed something that wasn't going to be all-consuming to me, because I could no longer serve God in ministry, and I couldn't serve my family well either. So this verse, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. All your ways acknowledge Him and He will direct your paths." And that's Proverbs 3:5-6. Became my favorite verse during that time. And The point is, to be a great leader, sometimes you have to get out of the comfortable spot that you're in. If God is calling you to do something else, sometimes you just have to take a risk and do it. And I'd like to say it's been an easy 10 years. It hasn't been. I mean, it's different to go from a job where you know you're getting a paycheck and you don't have to worry so much to now being responsible for making sure other people get their paychecks and being able to, you know, make sure that everything is paid for. But I'm here to tell you, even though I didn't know how God was going to do it, that I've always been able to make my bills, pay my bills, pay my the people that works for me. And sometimes I don't know how it happened. I just know that it did. And so I think that God will, if you're being obedient to what he's calling you to do, he will protect you. It won't be easy necessarily, but he will protect you. So I want to end this with a couple questions for all of you to consider and ask yourself. Okay, in what areas of your job do you need to begin to relinquish control and begin to trust God? I'll say it again. In what areas of your job do you need to begin to relinquish control and begin to trust God? Are you being faithful with the responsibilities he's given you to do in your work? Are you being faithful in them? If not, what can you change to be more faithful? And then the last thing is God calling you to get out of your comfort zone and do something different? What's holding you back? What one thing will you do to take steps towards moving in the right direction? Okay, that's all I have. I'm going to ask Gary to come on up and talk to you about his section. Yep.
Yeah. There you go.
That's it. Thanks. Again, my name is Gary Rudnicki. I have been coming here to Riverview for about a little over 3 years now. I am married. My wife, Kim, works out here at the front desk. A lot of you probably know her better than you know me. And I also have two children who are active here. I have a degree, 2 degrees in computer science, bachelor's and master's degree. I got my first job in IT back in 1979. Yes, that was before PCs were even invented, so I gotta go way back. I work at Jackson National Life today. I've been there for about 15 years. I've been a Christian for about 11. So I'm gonna tell you, we'll talk about a few of the experiences that I've had over the years, both in the workplace and in ministry. Before we start, I'd like to ask just a quick straw poll. How many of you today would consider that you're active in some form of leadership in ministry today? If you could raise your hands. Okay. And then how about how many of you are active in some form of leadership at the workplace? Maybe just a few more in the workplace than in ministry, and many of you both. So I'm just kind of curious what the balance was. It's pretty similar to the first session. One of the things, when I first became a Christian 11 years ago and started getting involved with ministries, I was not on the clean team, but somebody shared something with me. They said the church should be a safe laboratory for exercising our spiritual gifts. My handwriting isn't that good, or is it? It should be a safe laboratory for really practicing the spiritual gifts that we have. Why would someone have said that? You know, in the workplace, if you screw up, you could get fired. It can mean dollars and cents, you know, on the bottom line. Here, hopefully, we all give extra grace to people who are trying to grow and learn, you know, and really put their faith to practice. So that I felt like that gave me, you know, an open checkbook kind of thing to go try some different leadership things. One of the best pieces of scripture on spiritual gifts is Romans 12, 6 through 8. Paul says, we all have different gifts according to the grace given us. I've got some of them listed here. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it's serving, let him serve. If it's teaching, let him teach. Encouraging, let him encourage. If it's contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it's leadership, let him govern diligently. If it's showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. So obviously today we're here to focus on leadership. That's really what this whole day is about. But you're going to see how some of these others also blend in. One of the things I think when Paul was talking about this, he's not necessarily just talking about, there's no indication that he's talking about just in the church. So these same gifts, using these same gifts, can and should probably apply in the workplace. Unfortunately, even though the church might be a safe place to try out some spiritual gifts, sometimes at work you might just be in a position where there's nothing you can do. You know, there's no supervisor type position open, so you might feel like there's nothing you can really do to exercise leadership skills in the workplace. But I think I'll point out that there are some things that you can definitely do. One of the things that I really like, I like to compare is, you know, what would you say is the primary motivation of a team member of yours in the workplace? What's the primary motivation that might someone say in the workplace? Money. That's a safe one. That's an easy one. So how about for ministry? What's the primary motivation for somebody for ministry? Don't say money. So maybe the better question is there anything that overlaps the two? I mean, is there any motivation that both of them share? And in my experiences, I would say, you know, absolutely, that both people in the workplace and in ministry, I think they really want to see that what they're doing matters, that it affects the bottom line. So in the workplace, that might be obviously profits, getting your product out to market before somebody else, creating a cool little iPad thing that everybody buys now, and you can feel good that you put that out. So there's things that aren't just related to money, but that they did something that was significant. Definitely ministry world, that is definitely the case here. So if you take a look at every different ministry that we have here, how do you make a difference on the bottom line? Obviously, Mark and the pastors, the way they teach, it really affects the bottom line. The music ministry, helping us really get involved in music worship is a huge thing. I happen to lead the welcome team here at Riverview, and one of the things that we really decided that was really important was encouragement, that we needed to somehow encourage our 140 people that are on our welcome team, that what they were doing really affected the bottom line. So you know, how do you do that? Oh, you opened the door, great, that was awesome. You know, you shook hands, great, that was really awesome. That might work, it might feel a little shallow. So last year we tried something new, and we said, hey, let's do this, let's take advantage of the first timer group that's coming here. We really want to make sure that we're serving those first-time people and showing them how they can get to, you know, where everything is here and make it a good experience for them. So what we did is we started a program that where we, if somebody on the tear-off on the bottom of those sheets that we get every week, if they signed that they were a first-timer and gave us any information how to contact them, we send them a snail mail signed by whoever we taught that weekend. We send them an email saying thank you for coming. Inside the snail mail, we send a little card that says, bring this back to the Riv Warehouse and you get a free gift. And then there's also on the email that we send, there's a little survey. And the survey is very simple. We ask actually four questions. The first three are, what did you notice first? What did you like the best? What was your overall impression? The fourth item is just, is there anything we could pray for you for? So when people see it's a nice, simple survey, it's not too much, you'd be surprised how many first-timers click on that. So I have an example here from just 2 weeks ago. They said the first thing they noticed, this was at the 11:30 service, first thing they noticed, it was big, but not too big. So that's funny. What they liked best, the service was good. Leanne at the child care registration was very helpful. Showed us the kids' class and walked us back to the commons area. She explained everything to us. So we don't have commons area, and we actually don't even have a Leanne on the welcome team. We did determine though that this was a welcome team person and not a child care area, but that's good. We're blending ministries together, and we're actively working on that. And from a leadership standpoint, but it actually ended up being Lori. Actually, it ended up being Brian's wife. We went back. We said, hey, does anybody remember having this experience? They said, yeah, it was great. I walked them around and showed them things. So now I can take this feedback that I get from this simple little first-timers thing and once a month I collect all of these that come in, and I send it to Brian, who distributes it out to the team leads, to go back and encourage their folks. Look at you guys, you're making a difference. Here's real comments from real first-timers here. It really makes a difference. So I just really want to encourage you in this particular case, even if you're not in management at your work, in the workplace, that you can encourage others by getting feedback to them on how they're doing a good job. My career really took off after I started practicing leadership in ministry. I mentioned to you, I've been doing this since 1979, but I became a Christian 11 years ago. And in my job, I had some decent success with some smaller size teams, and I was pretty good at technology, and that went pretty well. Became a Christian, I started organizing large evangelism events with lots of volunteers. Came here and helped kind of coordinate and restructure the welcome team. I mentioned they're up to 140 and growing. I'm now working on the safety security team here. All of those things, working with volunteers, figuring out how they're motivated, how to organize them, started helping me thinking a little bit different way. I could now take that back and translate that to how does that work in the workplace? How could I utilize this in the workplace? A couple of different things I mentioned, encouragement. I mean, I learned so much about encouragement with my volunteers in ministry, and I think that really helped me back at work. I think it really helped elicit a great response out of my team at work. The other thing that I did, and this might not be a natural thing that you guys would just think about, but if it's something that you can potentially apply both in ministry and at work, if you have people on your team that have maybe been doing the same thing for a long time, stretch them. I create something at work called stretch goals. I want to give people a chance to get out there, as Noel talked about earlier today. I want to get them out there and try these different gifts that, even if at work, even if they're not Christians, I want them to understand that they may have skills out there that they haven't, natural skills that they haven't had a chance to try yet. But definitely in ministry, giving people a chance. And I mean, we have people here today that we're on the welcome team, just came in as a volunteer one day, and we've given them an opportunity to kick the tires. They liked it, they were good at it, and next thing you know, they're team leads. And so it really works. Don't be afraid to stretch your folks and give them an opportunity to grow. But on the flip side of that, the last point I have here is celebrating failures as well as successes. Because one of the things you might try is somebody might try that. You might stretch them, and they crash and burn. So what do? You know, in the workplace, it could be very expensive. Here, again, we need to make sure we give extra grace, and I'm going to celebrate the fact that we've tried something that doesn't work. Let's go try something else now, and let's see if there's another area that you have a great gift, a spiritual gift that you just haven't had a chance to practice yet. There's a great quote by Thomas Edison that says, he's talking about inventing the incandescent light bulb, and he says, "I've not failed 10,000 times. I've successfully found 10,000 ways not to make a light bulb." Because it took him a lot of tries before, and he didn't give up. He kept failing, and he was getting taunted, but he didn't give up. So I just want to encourage you to encourage your volunteers, whether in the marketplace or in ministry, to stretch. One of the things, if you aren't in a ministry leadership position today at Riverview, I want to encourage you, ask. There's unlimited opportunity here if you want to try something new. I just talked to somebody at the end of the first session who she wants to try something new. I'm like, you know, talk to me. There's plenty of opportunities here, and we're always looking for a chance to give people a chance to stretch into something new. This third item I have is blends in a little bit to what Judy was saying. How does a Christian leader demonstrate their beliefs in the workplace? I mean, what was the prime directive? What was the great commission that Jesus gave us? Matthew 28. He said, "All authority on heaven and earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and teaching them everything I've commanded you to do." He says, "I'll be with you now and to the end of the age." It was a very, teach them everything I've commanded you to do. That's pretty straightforward. So now, can we go into the workplace in a leadership position and can we start off a meeting in prayer? If we see somebody who's definitely not living a Christ-centered life, can we talk to them about their testimony? I mean, this gets to a really tricky area. Do we need to compromise our values as Christian leaders when we go into the workplace? My statement on that is just a flat out no. We should never have to compromise our Christian values. Many of us work at large companies where there's lots of diversity, and so we have to respect that. I happen to work for a company like that, in general, what their take on this is that don't do anything that would be considered, don't do anything that would insult someone else or be considered offensive to someone else, whether it's religion, whether it's, a calendar that you have at your desk that might be offensive to somebody, just don't do it. And people have been terminated for sharing their faith at work. Jeff and I are at lunchtime, sometimes we'll get into conversations about faith, and we have to be extremely careful, because if some Muslim folks are sitting next to us and they hear what we're talking about and they're offended, they could turn us into HR. I don't think we'd get fired in the first pass, but we could get a warning and eventually terminated for sharing our faith. So this is a tough dilemma as ministry leaders and workplace leaders on how we handle that. So what's my recommendation on how we handle that? St. Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words. And so my recommendation here is that your actions, the way you interact with people, the way that you respond to tough situations that happen in the workplace is going to make a big difference. People will notice that. And my recommendation, and like what I do, I feel like I need to be very prepared for this to happen. But if somebody notices it and they come to me and they say, hey, Gary, you know, I noticed how you acted in that meeting. That was very different. Or what made you think of doing that? I'm prepared to say, well, since you asked. And I figure at that stage, they've asked me, I'm going to answer them about it's my faith. This is what calls me to respond the way I do. And I always say, if I'm going to ever write a book, it's going to be, well, since you asked. And the Bible makes it really clear. 1 Peter 3:15, he says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. And I mean, I literally think about this ahead of time, that I am willing to take this risk and potentially get fired as long as my actions made me stand out. Somebody asked me why my actions are different. I'll say, since you asked, and I'll share the gospel message with them. And so I'm still there after 15 years. I haven't been fired yet, but it's something that we have to think about. I think that's very important as marketplace leaders who also are Christians. A couple pieces of practical application on this. You might want to ask a Christian coworker that you might have to give you feedback on how you're acting in the workplace. The only trouble is if you ask for that and you're truthful, just be ready for the response you'll get back.
Well, because you asked.
Yeah, so because you asked. And so if you're doing something to damage your testimony at work, I mean, I think you should want to know that. And I mean, it's just a very important part of the balance between the two. And again, just be prepared to share your faith. I think it's a very, very important thing for us always to consider. In closing, I wanted to talk about there's a great book that's been out there for maybe the last decade. It's been really big in the business world. It's called Good to Great by Jim Collins. Probably many of you have heard of this before, but what they did basically is he got a bunch of researchers and they looked at all the companies that are out there, all the big companies, and they looked for the ones that stood the test of time. Over a 15-year period, they consistently did better than everybody else in their segment of the market. And so the 11 companies floated to the top. They're the great companies. At the very beginning of the book, he gives you names of 11 people, and you've never heard these names before, and he says these are the CEOs of the 11 greatest companies of all time. And it's like, well, that's really strange. When they boiled down to what made these leaders, these CEOs, so great, they came down to two big things. They came down to these folks were driven to results. they were eager to move forward. They had lots of energy. They knew what was right, and they went for it. The other thing, and this what's strange about this, is this next attribute just does not go with being a successful, aggressive, active leader. It doesn't feel like it should go. Every one of those 11 leaders was humble. And they said, that is weird. That's just really weird. That's just not what you would expect to see, in a CEO of the most successful CEOs we have. Well, last summer, Dan Price did a message here. It was called Finish Well. He spoke from 1 Peter 5:13, and he was talking about in our lives as Christians, finish well. How should we demonstrate our Christian walk to the rest of the world? And he said to the elders among you, I appeal as a fellow elder, a witness of Christ's sufferings. He goes on to tells us to do our best. He says, not because you must. He says, because you're willing. Willing. He says, God wants you to be. That's pretty motivational. Not greedy. Eager to serve. Being examples to the flock. And it was really interesting. You know what Dan ended up coming up with? He goes, I can summarize Peter's whole message here on how he's asking us to be as successful Christians. He said, the key point here is that you need to be basically eager, driven individuals for your faith. Kind of interesting how that ties to the book Good to Great. And the last thing he said, be humble. And I was in the kitchen and I said, hey Dan, I said, this is really weird. I just got done reading this book, Good to Great. I said, it's really weird that the some of the best minds in the business world today have come up with this really unique thing that only the 11 best appear to be doing. And it just so happens to be the same exact attributes that their creator told them to follow. And so I don't think there's any coincidence here. They just happen to stumble on it, and they see how successful you can be by following God's word. So I want to encourage you guys, as you go out there, either in ministry or in the workplace, be driven. Really focus. Really try things out and be driven as to what you can do. Be driven as a leader of others. There's so many people here, so many volunteers who are looking for guidance in their areas of ministry. And be humble. Maybe one of the hardest things of all right there is being humble. So that's all I've got for today.
Aaron, we have about 10 minutes before lunch. But we thought we'd just have Judy here come up. Anybody have any questions they'd like to ask either of the presenters? Wow, it's a shy group. No comments, no questions.
If one there in the back. What about if makes it hard to be, I guess, driven and humble when 90% of the people that you work with are not Christian at all and they make sarcastic comments? How do you tackle that?
Means sarcastic comments to the way that you're acting?
To faith. Just faith.
To faith. You're going to get that up. You're going to get that all the time. I still say you still need to, with your actions, stay true to your faith. And I think it's going to stand out. One of the conversations we had at the first round here in here earlier today, the first session, was, what happens if somebody asks you to do something that's against your faith? And Judy had that exact experience where if she had gotten that job that she didn't get, later on she would have been asked to do something that would go against her faith. And I think that's something that we all have to decide early on in our careers and our jobs. What are we going to stand for and what won't we? So sometimes, you're going against the crowd. That's all throughout Scripture, that as Christians, that's what we're going to be. But I think you're going to really have an opportunity to make a difference if you do stand out, if you stick to your guns and deal with the harassment. Jesus had to endure a lot more than we'll ever have to endure.
Other questions? All right, well, the schedule for the rest of the day, lunch will be down here until 1, and then the final session will be with Steve Semerlot presenting in the main auditorium at 1 o'clock. So how about a round of applause for our two presenters?